Welcome back to Better Than I Found It, the podcast, all things college golf. Once again, you're listening to Mike McGraw, the men's golf coach at Baylor University. My guest today on Better Than I Found It is Iowa State Cyclone men's golf coach, Andrew Tank. Andrew has a very, very interesting background, was a player, was a longtime assistant coach where he played, and has a really unique story to tell about the spring of 2002 when he was still playing at Minnesota. We talk about his assistant coach, we talk about facilities, we talk about the challenges of coaching in a northern climate. We talk about a lot of things today. He's a very, very astute guy, very analytical thinker, really good guy, and a really great coach. So I hope you enjoy this interview with Andrew Tank. Okay, Better Than I Found It, listeners, we got a special guest today, the men's golf coach at Iowa State University, Andrew Tank. Thank you so much for joining me on Better Than I Found It.
Well, thanks for having me. Thrilled to be here.
Yeah, you know, we compete against each other. We compete for players. We see each other at tournaments. And we've been, I mean, you've been a long time there at Iowa State, so you've been in the Big 12 Conference competing. And a lot of people look at me and say, how can you interview a guy you're competing against? How do you do that? And I said, because he's going to teach me something. That's why. So I think I don't know how many people in college golf have gotten to know you well, but I think you're a thinker. I think you're an analytical thinker. You're constantly thinking about ways to do things better. Am I right about that?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Guilty as charged. Yeah. I think I like problem solving. And so, yeah, coaching scratches that itch for me. There's just so many ways to go about things, and yeah, probably to a fault at times, overthinker. But yeah, definitely like to think things through.
The way I've gotten that, not just talking to you at tournaments, but when we have a coach's Zoom call or an in-person meeting or whatever, you always ask some of the most poignant questions, things that matter. You are analytical, thinking about, you know, if we make this decision, how is it going to affect our conference going forward? So I've always appreciated that about you. And that's kind of one of the reasons I wanted you on this podcast, just to, you know, maybe I'll learn something. You know, definitely my listeners have enjoyed having coaches on this podcast. So you're a great addition to that. So thank you. You grew up in Iowa. I ask every coach what kind of sort of early influences they might have had, mentorship, whatever. Talk about growing up in Iowa and who helped you get into the game of golf, all of that.
Yeah, really fortunate to have help from a lot of people. I took up the game seriously around age 10. I think that was when you could start the junior golf program at my club. I grew up playing at the Wakanda Club in Des Moines. The teaching professional in charge of junior golf, Chris Foley, was a huge influence, mentor. As I started there, and yeah, you know, it was Friday mornings. I think I started in the 3-hole group, moved up to 6 holes, 9 holes, 18 holes. Yeah. And that's what I spent my time doing in the summer. There was a public course in town. So I had a really like a group of friends that would play there, and they had a great junior pass, and you could play for, you know, $3 kind of deal. So just grew up playing golf with my buddies and spending the whole day at the golf course in the summers. As I got a little bit more serious, I got connected with a gentleman by the name of Bill Rose, who was, you know, I would say he's more like a Harvey Pinnick type style. And he really mentored me in my junior high and high school years and led me. And yeah, I mean, I think I'm still uncovering the lessons that I've learned from him and making those connections of, you know, as a coach, I reflect on, you know, why do I coach and why do I coach the way I do? And as I look back, a lot of those things that he taught me, I think are just embedded in how I see the game.
That's great. I have not found a coach so far, and really a player that didn't have that early influence. Somebody, Greg Sands told me a great story about a guy that just helped junior golfers in his hometown growing up. So everybody's got one. That's really cool that Bill Rose affected your game that way. But so you eventually decided you would want to play college golf. So there was a recruiting process in there. And how does a kid from Iowa end up in Minnesota? And before you answer that question, you're at Iowa State currently. Were you a Hawkeye as a boy or a Cyclone? What were you?
Yeah. So unfortunately, or fortunately, I'd say we grew up more Hawkeye fans. But we weren't like crazy diehards. Went to Iowa State games too, growing up. I think going to college at the University of Minnesota really pushed me away from the Hawkeyes in the sense that I never knew that the state of Minnesota had this feeling for Iowa. You know, I never really grew up hearing many Minnesota jokes, but when I went up to college and I said I was from Iowa, I mean, everybody had these one-liners. And so, yeah, Minnesota really has a thing for Iowa. As being a Gopher and now as a Cyclone, it's definitely moved me away from the Hawkeyes.
Okay. All right. So I want to get that out on the table to begin with. So your time at Minnesota, a Gopher, obviously you spent 5 years there.
Correct.
And played for John Means initially. And I think during your fifth year, John left after the fall. His assistant, Brad James, was the interim. That spring of 2002, I was an assistant for Mike Holder. We played the national championship at Ohio State. I'll never forget that spring because something happened. I don't think it's been well documented. There should be a book written about it. But they were going to end golf at Minnesota. It was going to be gone. Talk about that spring, how you guys found out they were going to end the program. And then let's just talk about the whole spring, about how it didn't end.
Yeah, so I was on the student athlete advisory committee that year. And I remember going to a meeting in the fall. And it was kind of a strange meeting because I was invited. It was like two student athletes. And then it was, you know, some people from some different committees. And there was this budget presentation. And as a college student athlete, you know, I'm listening, but I'm not really connecting the dots that well. And then in February, you know, all of a sudden we were called into Brad's office. And the vice president at the time was letting us know that, you know, men's and women's golf and men's gymnastics were being eliminated due to budget issues. So they were going to eliminate those three sports. Crushing blow. Just sort of a surreal experience for everybody at that time. I remember everyone just trying to process it. And fortunately we had some great leadership. Brad did everything he could to keep the guys together. He was, you know, interim head coach, still a young coach at the time. We met with a business leader, in the Twin Cities, Harvey McKay, who's a pretty well-known writer that some of your listeners may have heard of. And I feel like that was a huge moment where he met with the team and just said, "Hey guys, like, it's going to be okay. Don't panic. The community is going to rally behind, these sports." So basically saying like, yeah, they said the teams are going to be cut, but let's not believe that that's going to happen. So we played that spring season with a lot of unknowns. My teammates were being recruited by other schools. There was, you know, kind of this idea of what's going to happen, who might go where. Brad was trying to hold it together. And I was in a unique position. Like you said, I was fifth year senior. I was the team captain. But my contributions in terms of making birdies and pars wasn't there. I wasn't in the starting lineup. And so that's really when I got interested in leadership, coaching. I got the hands-on experience of just trying to help my teammates stick together, stay together, and, you know, navigate this challenge that we had. And it ended up turning out to be, you know, Cinderella story. I remember we went to the Big Ten championships, which was over at Finkbine in Iowa City. We drove to that tournament. The last time Minnesota had won the Big Ten championship was 1972. And so this was 2002. So it was, had been 30 years. And somehow Brad found the trophy from 1972. We drove that in the van with us down to Iowa City. And yeah, I mean, we had a great team that year. I don't know what we were ranked, but we won the Big Ten championship there. Went on, did well at regionals. And then, as you said, the Scarlet Horse at Ohio State. And yeah, there was certainly some dramas there within the actual tournament. We had a guy that got a two-shot penalty for throwing a club that I wasn't privy to the meeting, but I know it was a huge, you know, rules officials and Brad and this player, Simon Nash, kind of stating their case, and he ended up getting penalized. And you probably remember better than me, Mike, the kind of going into, was it going to be a 36 hole cut or not? That would have bumped us out of the cut, I believe.
Yes. You'd have been 16th. Yeah.
So fortunately they didn't make that cut because there was, I think what it was weather that was threatening.
Every day at 4:45, the most incredible rainstorm would come down every single day. And so the tournament got pushed back and they were talking about a retro cut. They were talking about, cause they weren't going to have a cut that year. Yep. And the retro cut would have cut Minnesota out.
Yeah. And so that two-shot penalty would have been the end for us. And the thing I remember then, it must have been the third round, the way they did the pairings. One of our best guys, Justin Smith, who's now the head coach at Minnesota, he went out and played in the morning because he was doing well individually. You probably would remember better than me, but so we're in the hotel on Golfstat watching Justin. And he's out there making birdies and the team is just getting so fired up. Just seeing how well he's playing. And then we went out and obviously had a good round. I don't know what the scoring was. But yeah, fortunately went on, and won the national championship that year. It was just incredible. We had a walk-on, Matt Anderson, from Edina, Minnesota, that I think finished top 10, maybe finished fourth that year. Justin was also top 10. So yeah, it was just incredible. And I'm still really close with all those guys, and yeah, super, super defining moment for me personally, but also really got me into coaching.
So I didn't realize that's how you got into coaching. Eventually most coaches get in because they don't think the playing is going to work out like they thought. And yours in that case was the same, but you got to witness maybe one of the most amazing stories in the history of college golf. Shouldn't have happened. Nobody ever thought it would happen. And so tell me this, what was the process? You just won a conference championship and a national championship. They can't cut the program now. It's like crazy. You couldn't do it.
Yeah. So by that time there'd been a Save Gopher Sports committee put together, Harvey McKay and some other business leaders, in the Twin Cities, were raising the money, and there was a dollar figure that needed to be raised, in order to secure three more years. Tom Lehman came back and did a golf, clinic. And so, yeah, I mean, there was a lot of momentum, and I think winning the national championship really put the cherry on top that the money was going to get raised. And yeah, Brad was named the head coach. And fortunately for me, he took a chance and hired me as his assistant that August. It became official. So I went from being, fifth year senior captain, to a couple months later, I was, assistant coach, and, yeah, the rest is history.
That's a good hire by Brad James. And it didn't hurt your team, cause I know you guys won two more Big Ten championships while you were there. Not easy to do that. That's a tough conference, obviously, with Ohio State at the time being one of the best teams year in and year out. But you guys, you won two more as an assistant coach. And at some point, I think you'd worked for Brad for 8 years, and then you became the head coach at Iowa State. Is that correct?
Yep. And so, yeah, those first few years, I was just, learning the realities of being an assistant coach, and realized that it was something I wanted to pursue to be a head coach. And yeah, the Iowa State position growing up here, and knowing the area, we've got family, excuse me, different parts of Iowa and the Midwest. So yeah, it was really a natural fit, and in some ways a dream job for me to be able to come back to Iowa State and try to build my own program.
You said when you were a kid that, finally when you went to Minnesota, kind of your Iowa Hawkeyes days were over, but they have to be over now.
Yes, for sure. For
Okay.
sure. Yeah.
All right. Well, so I'm going to ask a question about coaching a Northern team. So, because it's something people talk about. I mean, people, oh, but the weather or whatever. And I coached at Oklahoma State for 16 years, and weather was an issue at Oklahoma State. I mean, it would, you'd have cold winters. One of the stats that most people don't know is at Oklahoma State, over a 40-year period, they finished first or second 27 times, I think it's 27, in their first tournament in February. So if weather really had that much to do with it, could they be that successful? I want you to talk about weather and tell me why it's not that big a deal. I mean, it is a factor, but why it's not that big a factor.
Yeah, I think like anything, it's your attitude towards it, it's your perception of it. And so, yeah, if it's not the first question, it's the second question we receive the most here. It was no different at Minnesota. I'm sure most programs in the Midwest, people want to know, what do you do in the winter? What are your facilities? How do you guys manage that? So I mean, it's a real thing, but at the same time, it's not. I don't think I look at the players that have been successful in the program, in Midwest Northern programs, and or the guys that didn't quite make it. And I don't think you could say that it was the weather that held anybody back. It's just there's just so many things that it takes to be a great player. And honestly, the weather provides you a lot of those opportunities to build those skills and capabilities that you do need. So yeah, and nowadays we travel so much, we have such great facilities with technology. It's way easier to be a successful Northern program in some ways if you're talking about just battling the weather than it was 20 years ago. Our guys have
Okay.
TrackMan. We've
Yeah.
got heated bays. We're doing training trips. So yeah.
I think you could just look at one example. Either the first or second greatest player of all times, Jack Nicklaus, grew up in a northern climate. He figured it out. And I talked to Steve Stricker, talked to Tom Lehman, talk, you could go down the list. There's a lot of great players. So I wasn't asking the question so we could justify that, but it's like people blow weather way out of proportion. It's like I'm okay with bad weather. It teaches you something about yourself.
Yeah, and I think the other thing is the reality is every place has some sort of weather. There's few places in the US that have great weather 12 months a year. So yeah, it's relative. And yeah, just this idea of going south. Yeah, the weather's maybe a little better, but it's not like it's just perfect every day. There's a few schools that maybe can claim that, but yeah, it's an issue everywhere to differing degrees. And again, it's just what's your attitude, what's your approach to it? We use it as an opportunity to make us better.
Yeah, and I think you and I both know, and I think most really good coaches know, it's not the external things that's going to make a difference. Intrinsically, what's inside that kid, that's what you want to do. You want to find out what he's got inside, and that doesn't it isn't affected by the weather. It just is not. So, but speaking about that, facilities, you have amazing facilities at Iowa State. Talk about how they came about and tell me a little bit about them because I think they're great.
Yeah, thank you. So I started here in 2010, and probably a year or so in, we were having some discussions. Myself, Christy Martin's our women's coach, just talking with our administration about, doing something to get a better short game practice facility, and Fortunately, our athletic director, Jamie Pollard, is really strategic and forward thinking and outside of the box. Our basketball team had built a facility off campus. It was a private land. The company built it for them, and then Iowa State leased it back from them. So there was sort of this model in our athletic department about kind of going outside the normal channels and looking for ways to build facilities. And so that had been successful for our men's basketball team. And here in central Iowa, a gentleman by the name of Dixon Jensen owns the golf course, the Harvester, that we play, and just dialed in with golf. And he's in the development business. And so, yeah, talking with him, picking his brain about what we could do. And as things evolved, it turned out he had a piece of land about 5 minutes south of campus. And the course architect, Keith Foster, that had built the Harvester with Dixon, they still have a great relationship. And so, yeah, I mean, it just turned into, it was going to be a short game facility. And now it's arguably one of the best golf practice facilities in the world. And so Keith designed it. Dixon built it for us. And yeah, I would describe it, it's a golf course you can practice on. So we have 14 different green complexes, a ton of different tee boxes, fairways, bunkers. And so you can find any shot, any lie, any wind direction. You know, that's the goal is to be able to create all those shots and find those places. We have a couple different loops of holes that the guys can play, you know, keep the course record kind of stuff. So we've had qualifying out there before. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's something that, I kind of pinch myself when I think about, that it's still not that it still exists, but that it does exist compared to where it was when we started. So
for young coaches, you came in, there weren't much in the way of facilities when you got there. And so you were able to watch this from the genesis all the way to today. And I know you're involved in improvements of the facility, but young coaches that say, well, how am I going to compete if I don't have facilities? Well, think outside the box, do some things, get some people interested in your vision, whatever. It's like, you can do it. We did it here at Baylor. Mike Holder did it at Oklahoma State. They do. It's happening. You better jump on board, right?
Yeah. And I think I would say, you know, having a great facility is great if you use it, and if you use it the right way, the smart way. But just showing up at an amazing place with awesome greens and, you know, just in pure condition that you think, wow, I'm here, doesn't get the job done at all. And I think that's something that I'm really aware of and trying to remind my guys, you can't just show up there. Okay, we have a great facility, but showing up at a great facility doesn't make you great. And I think of our women's program here, Christy Martin's done an outstanding job. And she was doing that before this facility. And they were playing the courses in town and finding ways to practice on the golf course, which is such an underrated way to practice. So yeah, it's great to have nice things. But having nice things doesn't get you trophies.
So you want to recruit kids. If I'm speaking to that same young coach, you want to recruit kids that could do it in a cow pasture or do it on an amazing facility like yours. The kid who's going to practice, and Mike Holder taught me this, the kid who practiced hard before you had that facility is the same kid who'll practice hard on that facility. It's not the facility itself. So, but it does show commitment. And yes. Iowa State's committed to having a great, great facility.
Yes, absolutely. And it's huge. It's changed the program. It's changed how people view the program. And yeah, it does show that commitment. And, you know, for coaches out there that are looking at building facilities, my piece of advice is to really get clear on what it's going to cost to maintain it, because mm-hmm. our facility is maintained every day. There's a maintenance staff, and it's expensive. Like, that is a huge annual cost. But I would say, you know, don't jump into something too quick unless you have those funds ready to maintain it. Because otherwise you'll start off with something nice and it'll just deteriorate. And we were fortunate that we spoke about that on the front end. Our administration understood that. Dixon understood that. And so they've really honored that. And yeah, it makes a world of difference.
Gives you a chance to be more successful. And the coach that follows you one day, if he has this facility, it'll make his life a lot easier. So let's talk about your All-Americans you've had since you've been at Iowa State. I think there's four of them. Let me name them just to make sure. Nate McCoy, Scott Fernandez, Nick Vokey, and Tripp Kinney. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Tell me about those guys. What made them so different? Why were they successful? Why were they the best players you've coached at Iowa State?
Yeah, so I'll start with Nate McCoy, who was, when I took the job here, he was a junior on the team. So fortunately for me, I inherited 2 years of his career. I knew Nate a little bit. His father was a member at Wakanda, you know, a huge legend in the game here in Iowa. And I think what made Nate so good is just his competitive instincts. He grew up around the game, watching his dad compete. And yeah, Nate was such a hard worker, hits the ball, super consistent, straight, unbelievable short game. Nicest guy you'll meet, is always polite, helping people out. But at the same time, he just wants to rip your heart out, step on your throat, just a real competitor. And so, yeah, that was it was awesome to see. He ended up qualifying for the NCAAs at Riviera his senior year. So really cool for him to be able to get that experience. And yeah, he was a special one. Still is a great player.
Scott Fernandez.
Yep. Scott Fernandez is one of my first recruits from Spain. And yeah, Scotty was just a great ball striker, really good person. He was awesome for the team, always would do something for a laugh. And yeah, just had a really awesome career here. All 4 years, really solid player. And he's been playing in Europe since he graduated. He's on the Challenge Tour, made it to the European Tour. So yeah, he definitely transformed the program with his performance.
Never met a Spanish kid I didn't like. They've just got such an energy about them. It sometimes bubbles over into a lot more than that, but I love Spanish players. What about Nick?
Yep. So Nick Vogt from New Zealand. Nick is he's been such. I've learned so much about coaching from Nick. He's one of those players where, you know, there's certain players where you need to kind of give them a little bit of a kick in the butt, maybe kind of start their fire, so to speak. Nick is the opposite. So my job with Nick was really helping to put on the brakes, because he's just go, 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 wants to be good. He's always trying new things. And so it was really a nice challenge as a coach to help sort of rein him in and keep him focused on things that were going to help him get better. Yeah, Nick had a great career. One, I think he shot 61 at regionals at Texas Golf Club. That was one of the special rounds I was able to witness. And yeah, he's had some success. He's on the Asian Tour this year. He's played Korn Ferry. He lives in Ames. You know, I'm going to see, I had lunch with him yesterday. He's out at our practice facility. So yeah, special guy and great player, and some good things still to come for him in his professional career.
I love it. He's playing professional golf out of Ames. I think that's fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah, great. Absolutely. Absolutely.
And finally, Tripp.
Yeah. Kinney. So yeah, Tripp Kinney, you know, Tripp is a local kid from Des Moines. Played at Wakanda, where I was from. So I feel like Tripp and I just kind of shared some of those things in common. And Tripp is the ultimate, just keeps getting better. Had some success as a junior, wasn't overly recruited, but every year as a Cyclone, he got better. And he was always somebody that was wanting to know, hey, what can I do to get better? And if you would tell him, you know, something he could do, he would do it. And then the next week he'd say, what can I do? You tell him, he'd do that. So now he's doing week one plus week two. So Tripp is somebody that just like had to be careful at times because he would still be doing stuff from the beginning of the season. We had a physical therapist that did some golf specific stuff with our guys and would give Tripp some exercises to work on. And I think Tripp was a senior and he might have still been doing the stuff from freshman year. And he's like, this is, you know, this is taking me an hour and a half now, but that's the kind of guy that Tripp is. Like, he'll just keep doing it. And he just wants to do whatever he can. Really cool story. Won regionals, to become an All-American. And then, he made it through all four stages of Korn Ferry Q School as a rookie and played Korn Ferry Tour last year and, has conditional status this year. And, he's just doing great.
That's great. I've witnessed every one of those players as an assistant coach or a head coach. And so it's good to hear about the backstories of these players. Okay. So the most famous Iowan never to play college golf in Iowa was Zach Johnson. So he didn't play it. I'm just going to ask point blank, if he was a senior in high school today, would you recruit Zach Johnson right now?
So he did play at Drake. Which yes. is in Des Moines. Yep.
But I meant one of the Power Five schools.
Okay. Yep. I mean, I'd like to say yes, but I mean, I think I'd be lying to tell you that would be for sure a yes.
You know, they haven't written the book. Somebody needs to write a book about that guy because you talk about making something from literally almost nothing. It's phenomenal what he's done with his career.
Yeah, and I remember growing up, Zach would have been maybe 4 or 5 years ahead of me. So he was somebody that I was sort of a bit on a pedestal for me as I would watch the Drake guys play and the Iowa State guys play. Jason Knutson was a cyclone at that time. And so, yeah, he was out of nowhere to some, but maybe for me, since I kind of remember him, you know, I guess I can kind of see that progression, but yeah, it's a remarkable story. And that's the beauty and the challenge of recruiting is you just don't really know.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we look at ranking and we look at ball speed and we look at, you know, just, we look at things that are on the surface sort of, and Zach obviously had a lot in. I asked that question kind of tongue in cheek, but the truth is I wasn't even aware he was only about 4 years ahead of you. So I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. News from Iowa. Okay. So we mentioned earlier, you were an assistant coach for 8 years. I was Mike Holder's assistant coach for that same amount of time. I've had an amazing assistant coach. He's actually the associate head coach, Mikkel Berrick Andreessen. Mikkel's been amazing. And before him, Ryan Black, Alan Bratton at Oklahoma State. I've had some amazing assistant coaches and very, very blessed to have that. And you can't do without it. If you get a bad assistant coach, it is a problem. You've got a great assistant coach. I want to talk about Ruben. Tell me about Ruben. Tell me why I think he's pretty impressive.
Yeah, so Ruben Sanjaya from Sydney, Australia. Somebody that I was fortunate to go through a pretty extensive recruiting process. And when I say that, I did a home visit in Australia. I've watched him compete out at the at Torrey Pines at Junior World. So really got to know him and his family. And Ruben was a great player here at Iowa State. Just really, really dialed in to getting better. And yeah, he played PGA Tour Canada when he graduated. And yeah, then he, fortunately for me, he was interested in getting in coaching and he's been with the program for 2 years now. And I think the thing about Ruben is just the way he connects with people. He just does a really nice job relating to all different kinds of people. And he is that type of guy, like you said. You know, you think highly of him. I know you've gotten to know him a little bit, but most people think highly of him, whether they've just bumped into him in the supermarket or they've had more lengthy conversations like you have.
Yeah. I wanted to mention that because I want people to know he's a great coach. My assistant coach, Mikkel, same thing. It's like, and he's actually the associate head coach, but you know, you just take it for granted almost when a guy's that good, and you shouldn't. It's just, you know, there's a lot of good young assistant coaches in the game. There's a lot of good young coaches in the game. I think more so than when you were playing, and definitely more so than when I was playing. So college golf is blessed to have people like that. And as a coach, you need to go out and search for somebody that has those qualities. So,
yeah,
for all sure. Right. Mikel, in fact, was asking me, you know, what questions are you going to ask Coach Tank this morning? And I said, well, you know, I've got this and that. And he said, could you please ask him this question? Because I remember how he handled this very, very difficult situation with Grace. And so I'm talking about Celia, a young lady on your women's team that was killed a few years back in town, you know, in the golf course. So it was a terrible time for college golf. It was a devastating blow, and I know it was for both of your programs. But Mikel spoke about it happened about the same time as the Big 12 Match Play Championship, and you spoke to our coaches there in our coaches' meeting, and we had a moment of silence for Celia. Mikel wanted me to ask you about that, how you handled it. He thought you handled it beautifully, and I did as well.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that, and that was, yeah, a terrible time, obviously, and yeah, something that you don't prepare for. And I think, you know, you're just your natural instincts come into play at that time. And we have a great relationship with our women's coaches and the women's team. We share a facility. And so, yeah, everyone just really came together. And yeah, it was a challenging thing. And I guess my biggest takeaway from that experience is, you know, all the people that reached out at such a tough time. I think that was really special. And I guess it's something that I've tried to be better at now, because sometimes when there's a tragedy or there's something uncomfortable, there's a little bit of tendency to, okay, what should I do? Should I say something? Should I reach out? And I guess what I've learned from that is just reach out. You know, anything, a card, a note, a message, a call, it does mean a lot. And, you know, our office was flooded with things from all of college athletics, not just golf. And so, yeah, that's something that I've learned going forward. And I think sometimes you have those uncomfortable, difficult situations. And my biggest learning from that is just, the people appreciate it. You might not know what to say. You might not know how to say it, but don't get caught up on that and just reach out.
Excellent. Yeah, excellent. And Mikel and I were both speaking about it this morning, and we thought you were very graceful in the way you handled it. And I'm sure you led your team well through that tragedy. I remember at Oklahoma State when our men's basketball program had a private plane go down and 10, you know, people associated with the basketball program were killed in January of 2001. That was very, very much the similar situation, very tough to deal with. So thank you for answering that question. So I told you at the beginning what I thought you were an analytical thinker. I thought you were just a really, really smart guy. So that's my opinion, but I'm not you. What's your best quality? You have some qualities. What do you think makes you a good coach?
Well, I appreciate it. That's very kind of you to say. Yeah, I think I am able to think about just from a lot of different angles and try to put myself in the player's shoes. I like problem solving, and a lot of problem solving is just sort of playing out different scenarios. I really like to learn. So, you know, being at Minnesota, I think what I really liked being a coach there was I was around these good players, and I was learning so much from them that I wasn't exposed to as a junior. So I think learning is a big part of becoming a better coach, and experience and being around the right people, which I've just been fortunate to be around those people and continue to learn. And so, yeah, I love coaching, and I love finding new ways, different ways, better ways to do things.
Wow. That's perfect because it's exactly what I thought. So, golf itself is a problem-solving discipline. You hit a ball into the rough. How do I solve this problem? I hit it in the buried line, a bunker, whatever. But people don't realize, and I think it gets understated sometimes, a college golf coach, I'm not going to say, and we both love our profession. I mean, really, really enjoy our profession. But you are solving problems on a daily basis because you still have 10 guys on the team. They all have different personalities coming from different backgrounds, and they got different issues. So it is a problem-solving discipline.
Yeah, and it's not just golf, right? It's everything involved with being a college athlete. It's everything involved with life, family, and so that's what I think I like about it too, is just the variety of problems. And they're not all problems, but the things that you're helping people go through, it's just a little bit of everything, and every day is different. And so, yeah, just trying to keep getting better at it.
How old are you, Andrew?
It's a good question. I am 44.
Okay, so you're basically 20 years younger than me. Are you going to be doing this when you're my age at 63?
I ask myself that, and some days I think no way. And other days I think I really hope so. And again, for everyone out there that's a coach, I think they probably connect with that. You have high days, you have low days. But yeah, the answer is I don't know, but at the same time, it would be truly special to be able to do it for that long. So I really hope that I can continue to evolve as a coach and be able to be in a position to do it for that many years.
I hope you
And
do. I really do hope you do it. Go ahead.
so kind of I wanted to share my first memory. I think the first time, I don't think I really met you, but I saw you. Probably the 2003 NCAAs at Carston. The two things that I remember from that. So now that was my actual first year as like an official coach. And the two things that stood with me from that championship was I remember seeing you and being real intimidated by you in the clubhouse at Carston. And the second thing was the soft serve ice cream machine in the dining. So those are my two memories from that year. But yeah, it's great that I've gotten to know you better over the years here, and certainly not as intimidated as I was back in 2003.
Well, in 2003, I might have been a little stressed. In those days, literally, the assistant coach did everything. I mean, 2 years before that championship, I set up a committee that ran a regional that spring, and then all these same volunteer committees. We had over 450 volunteers. I ran the entire, I mean, I truly was running the tournament. I got to watch the final round. Finally, I went out for the final round. The rest of the time, I was running the tournament. Thankfully, for these young assistant coaches now, you don't have to do that to run a national championship. But I appreciate you saying that. I was probably intimidating because I probably had a frown on my face. Who knows? But it's great to hear that memory. I remember you being a young coach as well. All right, so last thing I want to ask you before we finish here, what's the best piece of advice you've received from an opposing coach? Coaches, it's incumbent upon us to help each other out, whether you like it or not. What's the best thing another coach taught you?
I think that's tough because I don't think that happens. So when you say opposing coach, I'm not sure that there's really been a piece of advice that's been given. I've certainly got to know guys and pick some guys' brains. So I don't know that anything really stands out because everyone's trying to, keep their secrets close, right? Which there are no secrets, but yeah, I think I remember Mike Holder told me to just go recruit some better players. I think that's good advice. I think that definitely stood out as, a little bit of the obvious, but at the same time is important to remember. As a coach, you're only as good as the players that you can attract and the ones that you can help. So that would probably be one from Bill Rose that really stands for me as I was growing up is the center of the green never moves. That's what he told me. And at that time I didn't really understood what that meant. But now that really really resonates with me. And just that idea that understanding where to hit the ball, what your targets should be. And, you know, this is back in that, this is way before Decade and Google Earth and all the fancy books. But yeah, that's definitely a quote that stands with me and really kind of captured his style and his personality. Just very, he didn't talk a lot, but when he said something, it meant something, and it stuck with you.
Great, great, great advice. Well, Andrew, thank you for spending an hour with me. This has been great. I, you know, you think you get to know coaches. So I had you on here for a bunch of reasons. One, I respect you. But number two, I knew I was going to learn more about you. Definitely wanted to hear that story of the spring of 2002, because like they need to write a book. I can't believe it hasn't been written yet. That should never have happened. And it did. But thank you for joining me. I hope to, I know I'm going to see you out on the road recruiting this summer at some spot. So, and like Mike Holder taught you, go find players, right? Go find
some players. That's right. Well, thank you. Thanks for the opportunity. Really, really enjoyed it.